on Annenberg Radio News. Award-winning poet Dana Gioia is, in a word, inspiring.
Have the courage to do what you want. You know, I mean, and don't let anybody talk you out of it.
Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, September 27th, 2011. I'm Tiffany Brannon. The Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors is holding public comment today on a plan for new voting districts. California is required to redraw boundaries every 10 years based on new census figures. There are three plans being considered. Two of them would redraw the boundaries to reflect a larger Latino population. As Alec Norwick reports, that prospect drew an overflow crowd at the Board of Supervisors meeting today.
More than 500 people gathered in downtown Los Angeles to support or oppose proposals that would make significant changes to district voting lines. One of the proposals, called A3, would not make significant changes to the district lines. Mayor Jose Barrios believes that the proposal ignores the law and demographic shifts.
The purpose of redistricting is to address the demographic shifts in our community. It's not a matter of whether we like our supervisor or not. It's a matter of law. Ignoring the law is a crime. Pretending the law doesn't exist does not make the law go away. Our state legislator has accepted it. Our congressional districts have gone through it. My question is, why does the majority in the LA County Board of Supervisors choose to ignore what we have to do? The A3 plan does not address redistricting.
The second proposal would establish a second Latino district in Los Angeles. Lakewood Vice Mayor Diane DuBois is concerned about race being a primary factor for representation.
And I guess I have to ask a question because there has been a statement made that Latinos must represent Latinos. So I want to know, if I lived in your district, Supervisor Molina, would you not represent me because I'm not a Latino? That's what's implied.
The Board of Supervisors is expected to reach a decision by Friday. Alex Norwick, Annenberg Radio News.
This story had help from Ellen Castor. This morning, Governor Jerry Brown signed a bill that will limit the legal challenges facing the $1.5 billion football stadium to be built in downtown Los Angeles. The bill was supported by Mayor Villaraigosa and labor unions because it is expected to create thousands of new jobs. And as Carla Robinson reports, it allows the project to bypass some red tape.
The SP 292 law limits the time period for legal challenges just for the stadium project. This will protect AEG's proposed stadium against the competitors who might try to delay the project. The law also ensures that Farmers Field is built to be environmentally sustainable. At the news conference for the bill signing, Governor Jerry Brown talked about the millions of Californians who are unemployed. He says SP 292 will create new jobs and get residents back to work.
We're going to remove some regulations, we're going to speed things up, and we're going to protect the environment, but we're also going to do it in a practical way, because there are too damn many regulations. Let's be clear about that.
John Perez, the Speaker of the California Assembly, says the Farmers Field will have a significant impact on unemployment.
This project will create 23,000 new jobs, which will benefit California as a whole. And at a time when our state still has the second highest rate of unemployment in the nation, we need to be doing everything possible to create new jobs here in California.
Some remain skeptical about the stadium's lasting employment projections, and others are concerned about increased traffic. But now, all AEG and the city of LA need is an NFL team to play in the new stadium. Carla Robinson, Annenberg Radio News.
Police evacuated the Cal State Northridge Library today after reports that a man inside said he had a gun. The man is described as white, 5 feet 8 inches tall, and has spiky hair. There have been no reports of any shots being fired, but by 1 p.m., police had searched the library, but the man had not been found. The library will remain evacuated until police complete a canine search of the building. Mayor Villaraigosa today conceded that the recession has overpowered Los Angeles' best efforts to hang on to jobs. He says it will likely take 10 years for Los Angeles to offer the same number of jobs that it did in 2008 when the recession began. But he's confident in the city's ability to capitalize on the future. Rosalie Murphy reports.
Mayor Villaraigosa conceded Los Angeles to the recession today. It will likely take 10 years for the city to offer the same number of jobs it did before 2008. But now he's banking on the future. The mayor sees light rail and subway development as the foundation for a robust local economy. In fact, he sees it as a model for the rest of the country.
Now, let me be clear. Transportation is the key to building our own road to recovery. Now, we've raised the money here in L.A., but we need the financing from Congress to break ground on that road now.
Villaraigosa is working with California Senator Barbara Boxer on a congressional bill called America Fast Forward, which will increase the Department of Transportation's loan program to $1 billion annually. It's modeled on L.A.'s 3010 initiative, 30 years of transit development in just 10 years, funded by a sales tax increase and a federal loan. The mayor credited this program with almost 200 million fewer miles driven each year, plus 166,000 jobs over the project's lifetime. America Fast Forward aims to replicate 3010 nationwide.
They'll look to Los Angeles and Southern California and our new subways, our rail lines, our roadways, and our busways. It will be a catalyst not just for L.A., but for the nation if we can adopt America Fast Forward.
It may take a decade, the mayor said, but Los Angeles hasn't lost, and neither has the nation. Rosalie Murphy, Annenberg Radio News.
America's cities are bracing for another year of declining revenues and home values. As a result, nearly one-third of cities will be laying off workers this year. Chris Haney is the director of the Center for Research and Innovation at the National League of Cities. He says that when Southern California's home values dropped, so did its property tax revenues.
People's housing values also drive how much they spend, and how much they spend actually drives local sales tax revenues, which the city is also dependent on, and so their sales tax revenues have also struggled.
The big concern for city leaders, Haney says, is the uncertainty of national economy and where it's headed in the next few years.
Essentially, if the housing markets don't recover or don't recover quickly and unemployment stays high and people's confidence about the economy and their willingness to spend remains stagnant, it's very difficult for cities to predict any kind of growth.
Despite this insecurity, Haney is hopeful the economy will move back into a period of growth. He says there needs to be room for innovation to provide more job opportunities for the people. The financial prospects for Los Angeles look gloomy. The city's projected shortfall will grow to $200 million next year, budget officials say. Just a few months ago, it was estimated at $196 million. The slide in revenues means the city's workforce will likely see their numbers again reduced and their salaries cut. The Kaiser Family Foundation has found that employer-sponsored health insurance is up by 9% this year, and the cost of family coverage has doubled since 2001. Dr. Michael Cosino, a professor of preventive medicine at USC's Keck School of Medicine, says the rising costs are partly driven by the volume of people entering the system. Cosino says costs aren't rising evenly across the country.
So you end up with a place like L.A. or Boston or San Francisco with costs that are much, much higher than places like Denver or Boise. And there's no differences in what happens to people or their likelihood of getting better or anything like that. Just costs are higher.
Cosino says these are cities whose costs may be increasing because they have more expensive technology that are overutilized.
What you'll hear from the insurance industry is that the reason why they increase premiums is because doctors and hospitals are increasing their fees.
Cosino says there are also factors out of our control, like a rapidly aging population, all the more reason, he says, to promote healthy lifestyles to curb costs. Tonight, we'll have new moon and cool fall temperatures in the mid-60s. Tomorrow and Thursday, we'll wake up to cloudy skies, making it that much harder to get out of bed. But then, by midday, the sun will come out once again, and the temperatures will be in the mid-70s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, practicing Judaism with an iPhone? Maybe there really is an app for everything. President Barack Obama wrapped up his visit to the West Coast today. He's battling record lows in his approval rating to raise money for an election that some estimate could cost $1 billion. Ariel Edwards-Levy has more.
President Barack Obama spoke to an enthusiastic audience last night at Hollywood's House of Blues. He promoted his jobs bill, urged the crowd to stay motivated, and dealt with the odd heckler. But with tickets starting at $250, the
The focus of the event was fundraising. The president's just one of the candidates to hit the Golden State this month, ahead of Friday's third quarter fundraising deadline. GOP contenders Mitt Romney and Rick Perry also stopped by.
Whether you're Barack Obama or one of the Republican primary candidates, it doesn't hurt to talk to California voters, but what you're most interested in are California donors.
That's Dan Schnur, the director of USC's Unruh Institute and a former GOP operative. Wealthy Californians have long made the state a hub for fundraising efforts. In 2008, California raised nearly $78 million for President Obama. But with California's 2012 primary delayed until June, the state won't have much say in picking a Republican nominee. And since the state remains solidly blue, Schnur says Californians' wallets may speak louder than their ballots.
California is very relevant as it relates to fundraising. It's tough to see the state mattering in how the GOP picks its nominee, and it's difficult to see the state making much of a difference in a general election.
That doesn't mean courting voters doesn't matter. A new poll puts the president's approval rating among likely California voters below 50% for the first time since his election. Dean Bonner is with the Public Policy Institute of California, which conducted the poll. He says this could hurt President Obama's campaign.
In a place like California, he's still able to come here and raise money. It may not be as much as it was in the past. People in 2008 were very happy to donate to the president, both donors that were big and small, because people showed a lot of enthusiasm.
Bonner says big-ticket donors, the ones paying thousands of dollars for fundraisers, are likely to stay involved. The question is whether the millions of small donors are still saying, yes, we can. Arielle Edwards-Levy, Annenberg Radio News.
Happy New Year to all of our Jewish listeners. Rosh Hashanah starts tomorrow at sundown, but not all Jews will be celebrating in the synagogue. Megan Suisse looks at how Judaism is reaching out online.
That's the sound of the shofar, which reminds Jews to turn their hearts to repentance on Rosh Hashanah. But it's not coming from a synagogue. It's coming from an iPhone. Yes, there's an app for the Jewish high holidays, which start at sundown Wednesday. New media and faith aren't always a perfect pair, but religious groups have embraced technology.
We don't use technology for its own sake. We use it because it makes sense in the framework of what we're already doing. We're creating a modern religious experience.
Rabbi Laura Baum leads the brick-and-mortar congregation Beth Adam in Cincinnati and ourjewishcommunity.org in the online world. She and her associate, Rabbi Robert Barr, perform separate weekly Shabbat services for the two groups. For the high holidays, Beth Adam's services are streamed live online.
I ask you now to rise as we read together the English for Kol Nidre. Let all of our vows and oaths...
Orthodox and conservative Jews traditionally skew technology in religious services. Barr says that the community's reform and humanist tradition is important to its willingness to go online.
The value of the Internet is one that's about empowerment, creativity, boldness, breaking down stereotype, breaking down barriers, and our Jewish philosophy fits very well with that. Not everyone's does.
Rachel Wagner is the author of God Wired, Religion, Ritual, and Virtual Reality, due out in November. She says religious groups face common challenges online.
And there's a way in which the clicking of the mouse has become a ritual activity. And for some people, that's too easy, right? And so those people who are concerned about online worship, they often say, well, what happens to community?
Online services, however, can also build community, especially through chatting.
We've reached over 200,000 people. There are a lot of people for whom the online congregational experience has great meaning and import.
Judaism may be an ancient faith, but at least for some, technology allows it to adapt to a modern world. Megan Suisse, Annenberg Radio News.
Dana Gioia has worn many hats, from corporate executive to poet to chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts. Most recently, he's begun teaching at USC. He spoke with me about how loss has affected his writing and his push for more arts and education in schools.
Yeah.
You're from Los Angeles originally, correct?
I was born and raised in Los Angeles. And in fact, my mother, who is Mexican, was born and raised in L.A., so I'm from Hawthorne.
So what inspires you?
Poetry had always been part of my daily life, and that my mother, who was a Mexican woman of no great education, in school and elsewhere learned many poems by heart, which she would quote. I went to business school. I was in business for 15 years, and I did very well in business, but I wrote every night and every weekend, and I was publishing a lot. And I was in this kind of ironic situation. I'd be in the Charlie Rose Show at night, but back in the office in the morning. And then I had a personal tragedy. My first son died suddenly. Anybody, you know, who's ever had this happen to a son, a sibling, even a parent, you know that something like that just, it's like a wildfire going through your life and it burns everything down in its way. And what's left standing are a few enduring central things in your life. And so after that happened, you know, I just said, you know, what do I really want to do? And money just doesn't motivate me. What really motivates me is a life that is, I'm fully engaged with.
As chairman, you created the largest public programs in the NEA's history. How did you accomplish that, and what programs are you or were you most involved with?
I did not want to run the NEA. I did not want to go to Washington. I did not want to get involved in politics. And I really turned down that job. I did not seek the job. I kept turning it down. But I felt eventually somebody had to take the helm of this great institution and demonstrate to the United States why it needed a public agency dedicated to arts and education. And so a month after I came to the NEA, I did something that nobody would ever have predicted. I announced the largest program in the NEA's history.
So why do you think arts and arts education specifically is so essential?
The purpose of education is not to prepare somebody for an entry-level job at Walmart. It's not to give them some base level of skills. The purpose of education is to develop the full human being, to awaken a child, a teenager, to the full possibilities of their future and their self. But the purpose of arts education is not to produce artists. It's to basically produce complete human beings. And I think what we've done is we've limited the possibilities. So, you know, I think it's actually a tragic situation in the United States, and that we are limiting the future of this nation by not awakening the creativity, the humanity, all of the intangible skills of the young. I mean, I have a very simple suggestion, which is that our schools will take seriously what our citizens take seriously, what our society takes seriously.
Dana Gioia, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
The Los Angeles Times reports that the FBI has been investigating inmate beatings and other misconduct by sheriff's deputies at the L.A. County Jail. In one case, an inmate who was an FBI informant reportedly paid a deputy $1,500 to smuggle him a cell phone. Sheriff Lee Baca is angry the FBI did not tell him about the investigation. He told KTDVS, Good Day LA, that it's illegal.
The truth is, the sheriff runs the jail, and the sheriff's responsibilities have to be respected.
Sheriff Baca is meeting today with the U.S. attorney to talk about the FBI's investigation. We love making friends on Facebook. Visit our Facebook page and like us. Miss a story or want to hear it again? We keep our website, annenbergradio.org, updated with all of our reporting.
And I'm Lexi Cook here with a look at some of the top stories tonight on Annenberg TV News. Opening statements were given in Dr. Conrad Murray's trial today. Find out what happened inside and outside the courtroom. Also top news tonight, Cal State University Northridge was evacuated today after a suspected gunman threat. And a study released today by Complete College America says college graduation rates are dropping. Find out where USC stands. Tune into Annenberg TV News tonight at 6 to hear these stories and much more.
Well, that's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Smitha Bondad, Ellen Castor, and Solomon Fuentes. Emily Frost is our producer, and for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Tiffany Brannon.